This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody. This is Wells Tech, episode 482, recorded on January 31st, 2017. I'm Martin Spriggs, and you've joined a show talking about technology, but not just any kind of technology, that technology which is hopefully useful for spreading the gospel, technology and ministry in those intersections. And joining me as usual, still in sunny, warm Mississippi, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am just fine, Martin. Just because I'm in the sunshine doesn't mean that Wells Tech can't be in the sunshine as well. I always look forward to the last show of the month because that's our Ed Tech show. And joining us from Omaha, Nebraska, Mr. Sunshine himself, Jason Schmidt. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Martin. Hi, Sally. Sun's shining here in Omaha. Sun's shining. It's a beautiful day. We'll take it.
And the sun is shining here, so sun all the way around. And a very happy topic. And As long-time listeners will know, or maybe even short-time listeners, this once-a-month show is really focused on educational technology. And of late, we've been taking a look at different topics presented by the Horizon Report, which is kind of a forecast of things to come, things that are on teachers' minds, educators' minds, as they look at where technology will fit in the educational landscape. And kind of a fun thing to go through, but many of these things are very real and going on right now. And I think one of the topics that caught our interest and that we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about today is wearables or wearable technology. And that definition is a little bit fuzzy because it can refer to a lot of different things, VR headsets, watches, you know, anything that is on your person. And we'll talk about a few of those things, but real interesting stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Excited to get Jason's take on it because I think he's living it out there in Omaha. But I think, you know, we can look at it from a lot of different angles. Like you said, Martin, there's all kinds of technology involved. And in the Horizon Report, they say time to adoption, 4 to 5 years. So definitely still a developing space. So maybe, Jason, you can give us a feel for what you're doing so far in your school district with wearables.
Yeah, sure. As you kind of pointed out, you know, the whole concept of virtual reality is still very bleeding edge. And, you know, if we look at the Horizon Report and we're looking at 4 to 5 years for adoption, that's like 150 years in like people terms, right? as opposed to technology. Right. Yeah, exactly. So this is very much in its infancy right now. In our district, we're actually not doing a whole lot with virtual reality. There are a whole bunch of reasons for that, but the biggest one is probably just that the bar for entry is so high to get started with something like that. You know, we looked into things like, you know, an Oculus Rift or, you know, PlayStation VR or any of that kind of stuff. And these tools cost thousands of dollars and need really expensive dedicated hardware just to run them. So it's not very cost effective to do something like that. And then the other thing that we've kind of looked at is Google Expeditions. And, I know you guys did a show on those just recently. But the thing with Expeditions too is, you still have to get the handset thing for everybody. And everybody still needs a phone. It's got to be compatible. All of those kinds of things. So it doesn't necessarily work in a bring your own device kind of situation. You almost need to have a dedicated kit to be able to do those kinds of things. So the devices and the training and everything that's required to do those. And then, you know, to be perfectly honest, I look at virtual reality right now and it's almost kind of a one-trick pony, right? You can look around and kind of see things, but, you know, after a while, it gets to be either there's just not a whole lot else to do, or, you know, what else do you do with it? It's more, you know, it's more of an entertainment value kind of a thing rather than educational value, the way that it is at this point.
What do you think is the promise of virtual gear, virtual tools that has educators maybe looking at this, and why it made its way to the Horizon Report? What do they see coming that's going to make it more mainstream and more usable?
Well, I think what people see right now, and what a lot of those farther-reaching things on the Horizon Report kind of deal with, are more along the lines of this is what's brand new and really cool, and this might be something that we could try and hijack for education. So I think they're still kind of thinking about how that fits in with everything else that can be done in a classroom. You know, I could see a lot of things as the technology develops and matures. I could see a lot of things going for like distance learning opportunities. So, you know, a kid is sick and at home or something like that, they can put on one of these headsets and be in the classroom and look around and interact with everybody and kind of have their virtual presence just right there. Or more interactive kinds of things, you know, more along the lines of things like games, or interacting with an environment, or, you know, taking a virtual field trip. We're going to go to the Louvre and, you know, walk around and actually see what's, you know, and kind of have that experience of being there without actually being there. And as the technology advances, there will be more and more opportunities for those kinds of things.
I think a few more areas that the Horizon Report touches on, but, you know, the development is not there yet, are other types of wearable devices, like your Fitbits that you wear, those kind of things for Phi-Ed classes to help students learn more about their body and track biometrics and things like that, their sleep patterns and all those kind of things, so that they become more aware of the effect different types of stresses are having on them, that kind of thing. And then a whole other side of it is creating their own wearables. So that concept of like a robotics kind of thing, but instead wearables. So there's digital equipment in their gloves or their or whatever it may be that lights it up or that does different readings or whatever it might be. And so engaging students in more of the STEM type curriculum things, especially girls maybe, with some sewing and things like that to go along with it. So several angles there.
Yeah, and that's the approach that we've taken in our district as far as wearables are concerned. I'm much more interested in the creative aspect or the hands-on engineering kinds of skills that kids get out of those kinds of activities. So what we've been focusing on is there's actually the Nebraska 4-H has got a grant from the National Science Foundation and developed and wrote a total curriculum that focuses on wearable technology and how to incorporate electronics into textiles. And I shared a link, you know, you guys, you've pulled up the BLAST website that actually has links to a whole bunch of other really cool stuff. I'm not 100% sure if I was supposed to share that with you guys, but it's publicly available on the internet. So if you knew what you were looking for, you'd probably end up finding it anyways. But the whole purpose of this curriculum is to get kids thinking about programming and circuitry and electronics and using conductive thread and all of this other kind of stuff. Really, really great materials, really great content. And we've been using that very successfully in our district for the past 3 years now, I think, since the grant got started. That has been really well received. Our teachers really like the materials. The kids really learn a lot throughout the entire process and the programs and things like that. It's not super expensive for us to run it. And the kids come away with something that they can actually keep and hold, which is also really, really an awesome thing. So really have had a lot of fun using the WearTech program and having kids develop their own wearables. I think that's where we're at with the technology right now, is more on the maker end of things, where, you know, it's not really, there are parts that are commercially available, but kind of, you know, becoming inventive and in and doing something interesting with this stuff is really, I think, where I see a lot of the benefits with this field of technology.
It seems like, to me, the appeal or potential, the angle that the Horizon Report is taking in educators as they're looking forward to this kind of stuff in the future is not as a kind of a standalone, well, now we're going to put on the glasses and it's just a virtual world that we're all going to live in, but how these technologies play with robotics and distance learning and all kinds of other things. As these kids grow up, they're going to be living in a world where virtual reality and these kinds of things are going to be part and parcel of other very important things. Let's say, in the medical field, is a surgeon can do an operation from halfway across the world. Diagnosis and all those kinds of things mixed together. And our students, especially those that are interested in STEM type things, need to be maybe introduced to this so that as they progress through their careers and as they begin to get more comfortable with this, they can be thinking about how this plays in with other technologies, that whether that's augmented reality or virtual reality or whatever it is, they've at least got a taste for it and know that, hey, what are the possibilities here?
Yeah, I think one vendor that's worth mentioning in this space is SparkFun. I think, Jason, perhaps you've talked about SparkFun in the past, but they have a whole section of their website dedicated to wearable tutorials. Now, obviously, they have all of the equipment you need to make these items available on their website for purchase. So if you're looking for a Lily Mini, for instance, you can definitely get that from the SparkFun website. But they give you so much more, just tons and tons of great tutorials here, how to make Pokemon Go patches and sound reactive wire costumes and things. So with all of those different ideas here, I would think anyone could take this and even do a little mini session in their classroom on wearable technology just to expose to the students.
Fits in nicely with our makerspaces conversation, not too long ago. Mm-hmm. These things seem to be coming together a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's definitely what's driving the adoption of things like makerspaces and things like that. We're kind of seeing the pendulum starting to swing back towards getting kids to make stuff rather than produce or regurgitate those kinds of things. And this is just another way that's kind of being incorporated.
Yep, we have a few more links to share. There's links to articles about girls making and sewing and things like that. Like I mentioned, kind of a way to engage girls with some of those skills that they may be interested in, as well as technology. And even Instructables, which is a great website with loads of great instructions for all kinds of projects, has instructables for wearable electronics classes. So no shortage of ways to dive in and perhaps give it a try, maybe as a little summer program or a special unit for enrichment in your classroom.
Super. I'm sure some of our listeners are in this space a little bit more than just casually interested and probably can share some of their experiences. That would be awesome as well, so we can get some firsthand stories and information about how this is a real thing. Even today, even though we're talking about something that's probably going to come into its own a little bit later, I'm sure we've got listeners who are at least dipping their toe in the water, and it'd be interesting to hear perspective what where this is all going as well. So don't be shy about sharing that with the rest of us. We'll include a bunch of links in the show notes, the SparkFun stuff, the WearTech stuff. There are a surprising amount of resources out there that if you're interested in this, thumbing through these might give you some ideas. And to be honest, Jason, you talked about the cost, the barrier to entry, but some of these things are very low cost or do-it-yourself mm-hmm. kinds of things that can whet the appetite of the students, can introduce them to some of this stuff, and help them on their way. So we'll include all that stuff in the show notes. Probably about time to move to our news in tech section. Sally, we came up with some Google Voice news recently.
We did. Our friends over at TechCrunch recently reported that the new Google Voice has launched. And along with that launch, it brings modern look, group chat, photo sharing, and more. So I don't know if you guys use Google Voice or not, but it's been around for quite a while. And in our family, we kind of adopted it as our go-to phone number. It's like our home phone number that we give out to folks, and then it forwards to both my husband and I, so when it rings we both get the calls and can cover them. You know, it's just due for an update, I think, a little modernization, and that's what Google's added. They've made the interface easy to run in the background, so you can get chats and things, notifications easily, group chat, photo sharing, some of the things that come along with texting type apps, like your message on an iPhone or our Messenger through Facebook and things. They've just kind of upped the ante with Google Voice. So I thought it was worth a mention.
And this is kind of a little bit surprising because there had been so little activity in this space, and now they're coming out with kind of a refresh and maybe a renewed interest in it. As Google is sometimes want to do, they just kind of let things die on the vine, and then you look around the next day, it's, you know, hey, we're canceling it. It's not enough interest. So it's good that this really useful service, like you mentioned, is one of the best use cases I've heard of, Sally, is kind of your home phone. As people are trying to get rid of their landlines, they are then stuck with the quandary of, well, whose cell phone number do you give out? And having a unified number makes a lot of sense, even if it's not even in the same area code. I don't think area code codes matter as much anymore. So I have
absolutely
single number, single voicemail box, good quality. You can use it from your computer as well, or answer calls on your computer as well, or tablet or whatever. So good stuff.
And it transcribes for you with the Google Voice transcription kind of function.
Chuckle. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for that news in tech. I think we're going to move on to our tips or picks of the week. Jason, you're our guest this week. Did you bring along a pick with you?
Yeah, I did. Going kind of along the lines of wearable technology and how you can incorporate that into the classroom, I want to talk about UNICEF Kid Power. So these are a wearable fitness activity tracker, similar to like your Fitbits and things like that. But the cool thing about these is this is sponsored by UNICEF and a couple other corporate sponsors. And the more missions kids complete, the more resources are made available to kids in third world countries who may be suffering from malnutrition or things like that. So as kids earn points, they unlock these therapeutic meals for kids that are malnourished, and kind of allows them to, you know, kind of get back into a healthier kind of a situation, so that they can keep on living, which is awesome. You know, and then obviously we can tie this with ministry, you know, using, you know, talk about, you know, Africa missions and how our Board for World Missions is doing with all of these different things. Brings up some of those social issues that you find out about in the third world countries as well. The cool thing about this is you can buy these online, so you can get individual kits and then buy those and then get those with just for your own children personally. But then you can also, if we go all the way down to the bottom, there it is, Kid Power for Schools. You can get a full kit that syncs to one device for like a teacher or a PE class or something like that. And then that allows you to track what your entire group of kids are doing. So a lot of really neat possibilities with something like this. And I'd be, you know, we're looking into getting a couple of these kits here in my district to just see how it goes. And we'll kind of, you know, I can report back about this time next year to let you guys know how things are going with that. So UNICEF Kid Power and the school kit in particular.
So these are health trackers, step trackers. What do they track?
They are pedometers, and then they also track a few biometric things, so like heartbeat, body temperature, things like that. And I think that's it.
There's a gamification of getting healthy, yep. but a nice beneficiary of UNICEF getting money from the purchases, I suppose, of the devices. How much are they?
You know, that's a great question. The classroom kits depends on how many you purchase, and they also come with a tablet. But those are anywhere from $750 for, it's $1,000 for a 25 count for 25 of them. And then if you can go to 30 for $1,250, or you can go to 40 for $1,750. And if you just buy them individually, I think they're about $50 a piece.
Okay. Okay.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Not bad.
And I saw on the webpage that if you purchase before sometime in mid-February, you can join the spring program. Mm-hmm. Kind of get in that way. So
correct. Yep.
Now's a good time to bring this up. Great. Thank you, Jason. Sally, what have you got this week?
Well, I just kind of saved an EdTech news item that I was reading recently from the EdTech magazine. Let's see if I can share my screen. The title of the article is Department of Education Creates New Evaluation Tool for K-12 Administrators, a simplified EdTech evaluation process is on the horizon. So the concept is educators want to know how they're doing in terms of educational technology and integrating into the classroom and things like that. And they've come up with something titled the EdTech Rapid Cycle Evaluation, or RCE. And you have an RCE coach that will guide you in completing the evaluation and ways to improve. The website is edtechrce.org. And the Rapid Cycle Evaluation Coach helps you evaluate educational technology use in your school so that you can make better and more informed decisions and improve student outcomes. So I added this as my pick of the week, and then I realized it was actually a bonus Jason pick because Jason has some experience with this tool, it seems.
Yeah, my district is actually participating in the pilot program for developing this tool. So we're in the process. I can show you our dashboard real quick. We don't have a ton going on right now because we're kind of in between projects. But okay, so that looks like it's showing up. I got to resize everything. We're taking a look at our accelerated reader, for example. So it takes you through the entire process, and it's all research based. So you know, you develop a question, who's using it, identify your audience, and then planning your research. You know, so it takes you through really step by step by step. If you're big into data and research and things like that, this is a really good way to formally structure a study or conducting a study. And then the other thing that they do, and that's what's the really powerful part of it, is the data analysis. So you put your data into a spreadsheet, and then the tool will actually analyze it for you and, you know, calculate things like your standard deviation and all of that kind of stuff that you wouldn't necessarily want to spend time just doing individually if you're just doing this on your own. So really, like I said, really clean, really simple, easy to use. And then, you know, as part of the beta program for us, one of the things that we've been able to do is we had a little bit of input into how the tool was developed and things like that, and some of the things that are available. And then we'll also be, we're conducting a couple of different studies over the course of the next couple of months where, those results will be publicly available then afterwards, and, people will be able to, you know, other districts will be able to benefit from our research. So really a neat tool. And, you know, if you're anywhere into trying to justify technology purchases or want to run pilots and things like that, this is a really great tool to help support those.
Yeah, I think with all that data and all that analysis, it would show you gaps and outliers and things like that where you maybe have overlooked an area of emphasis that would be important to students. Great. Great.
Nice. Thanks, Jason and Sally.
Nice coach, free coach to use, and seems very worthy. So.
Yes.
My pick is a blog post, and we're talking about wearable technology, but one of the concerns with that kind of stuff, watches and Fitbits and even more in maybe more mainstream technologies is in laptops or tablets is battery life. And I found a nice blog post from Lifehacker, 10 ways to extend your laptop's battery life. Of course, we'll put a link in the show notes, but from 10 to 1, let me just go through these real quickly because they are all pretty applicable even with the modern power saving techniques that are built into some of our laptops now. Number one, tweak your built-in power saving options. If you've never played around with this, there's usually a number of options for you when you go into these settings. Sometimes there's a balanced mode, which is what you normally would have it on, but again, there's sometimes a an option to go with true power saver, so you're bringing everything down and getting squeezing as much battery life as you can get out of your equipment as you can. And very often, I think with a mobile society that we're in and people working in different locations and whatever, battery life is a huge deal. But sometimes you need that high performance power. There's usually a selection for that. Number nine, use your laptop manufacturer's battery maintenance tools. Most laptops come with these kinds of things straight from the manufacturer. They talk about maybe getting a battery monitor to see what is the biggest drain on your battery. Number seven, keep the brightness down when you're on the go. The screen brightness is probably one of the biggest battery drains on your laptop or mobile device, so turn that down. Keep it cool. They have kind of a DIY cooler tray, an egg tray cooler, but you can get little mats. I've talked about these on the show before, just to kind of keep the air flowing underneath the equipment so that it is not being stressed by its environment. Number five, avoid full discharges. So don't run it down to the bitter end if you can help it. That is not especially good for your battery. Number four, kill power-hungry apps and processes. If you're on a Windows machine, Control-Alt-Delete and go to the task manager. You can kind of see what's chewing up a lot of your battery. What are those applications that are doing it? On Macs, it's just going into the utility area and system monitor. Number three, kill power-hungry hardware. They talk specifically about Bluetooth. So if you're not using Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, don't leave those on because those will kill your battery. On Windows now, hibernate, not just sleep whenever possible. So that by default, most Windows machines, when you close them, will go into sleep, which is kind of a low power state. But if you go into hibernate, that's actually saving everything where you left off and totally shutting things down. It'll come back up when you open it. It takes a little bit longer. But if you're going to be away from your computer for a day or so, it's better to not just sleep it, but put it into hibernation where it's not taking any power whatsoever. So you'll wake the computer up just to where it was, but you haven't lost any battery. And then last but not least, number one, kill those tabs or try a different browser. In this article, they kind of finger Google Chrome as being a true battery hog. And in my experience, that's actually very true. They also call it Firefox and even Safari. They say the best browsers for battery life are actually Edge in Windows and Opera in Windows and Mac OS. That was kind of surprising. If you can live with those options, that would be maybe the best browsers to use when you're on battery. So good article from Lifehacker. If you're concerned about battery life, those might be good tips to keep in mind.
I think maybe what I need to do is get really good batteries because I can't live without my Chrome browser and a lot of tabs.
And there's always a trade-off, yeah. And I use Chrome all the time, too. I like the tab syncing and all the extensions that go along with that. But you pay a price.
You know,
price is battery life. Normally, when I'm in the office, I'm plugged in. Not a huge deal. But I can see it degrade the performance of the machine. If I do have a lot of tabs open, you can kind of see the resources that are being used, even on power, and it's kind of slowing the machine down, not, you know, and it's not no effect on the battery. But so just things to consider.
Yeah, I have an old MacBook Air. I say old. It's like 5 years old now, 6 years old. And I actually uninstalled Chrome on it, and I instead use Vivaldi. It's not as robust as Chrome, but it still supports all of the extensions, and also you can sync all of your bookmarks and things like that. So it's like Chrome Lite, but it's a lot better on battery life than what Chrome has. The only thing that it can't do and that it doesn't do well is switching profiles. That's the one thing that I need that I don't have. So that's the only, I only use Vivaldi on that one computer, but it's a good option.
How do you use profiles, Jason? You say you have more than one. I only have one. Do you have work and home or different roles you have as district there?
Here, let me, I'm just going to show my whole desktop here. So this is my Chrome browser. When I open it up, you see I have all of these different Google accounts that I switch back and forth between. And then depending on what I have going on, so, you know, like this is my personal account. But it keeps everything, your browser history syncs differently. It keeps you signed into different accounts that way. If I need to do something specific, you know, I have my training account, and then it also keeps track of like your bookmarks are kept separate, and you have different sets of extensions, like you see up here. I've got different extensions based on the account that I have open. So it's a huge resource hog after a while, but it's
would be a real time saver if you try to balance those. So does it remember from profile to profile what tabs you had open? So if you switch profiles and you've got a certain set of tabs open, those will be there when you come back to that profile?
There's an extension for that. I can't remember what the extension is called. But I just have my history synced. So I just gotta show my screen again. If I show you guys my history, see, I've got recently closed here, but then I also have a Chromebook. I also have a MacBook Air. I have a Surface Pro. And you can't see any of that, can you?
No.
No, it doesn't show that.
No, sorry, I wasn't sharing. Yeah, all right, never mind. It shows me in my multiple devices. So I'm signed in. Wherever I'm signed in, it syncs my history across devices.
Okay.
Sweet.
For sure. Now, do you use different profiles?
I don't use different profiles, but I have, I don't know, infinite Google accounts. I just switch between.
I'm wondering if that would be a solution for that. I mean, I'm always signing out, signing back in, adding an account to Google.
Wondering if you sign out of everything, you're just lost for a while. So
yeah.
I actually use one bookmark bar across all those different accounts, so I have a mixture of home, personal, and work and stuff on my bookmark bar.
Yeah, and you're really locked into Google Chrome.
It's my brain.
You know, it only exists. So interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jason. A little extra tip there.
We're going to
move on to our ministry resources section, and 2017 is the year of ministry resources, where Sally and I make every effort to kind of focus on a ministry resource, give it a little special love and treatment by a separate blog post, maybe even a screencast. Sally, you got a ministry resource this week?
I sure do, Martin. Hot off the presses, I'm going to talk a little bit about Jeopardy for church and school. So I'm not talking about putting your church and school in Jeopardy. I'm talking about the game show Jeopardy and the fact that you can create those for church and school use. And I think, you know, it's an ed tech show and it definitely has education ramifications. Jeopardy is basically a game where you have 25 answers and someone comes up with the 25 questions for them. But my take on is that you can do things like Bible trivia or whatever it is that you're studying in your classroom. And that could be Sunday school classrooms or catechism classrooms or whatever it is that you're studying in Bible history or whatever. So what it takes and an answer, and you ask that. You can have teams. If they get it correct, you can give them the points that they earned for that question, and then continue back to the board, and that question will be removed from the play. And so pretty straightforward and simple. The website Jeopardy Labs allows you to do this very painlessly and for free, and even without any advertising, which is just kind of unheard of these days. So I just went into edit mode on my my Jeopardy quiz, and basically you can put in whatever five categories you want for your Jeopardy game, and then when you click on each individual block, you can put in the answer and the question for that block, and obviously save everything. So it, you don't have to necessarily create accounts or anything. When you create a new Jeopardy game, it just asks you to give it a password. And as long as you remember that password, you can get back into edit mode on your Jeopardy game. So again, pretty straightforward for things like catechism or traditional school curriculum to make this a different learning experience for your students. But in different congregations we've been a part of, we've used it for fellowship events as well. So this one was used for a Unity Sunday event where we had all the congregation come together for one service rather than separated services. And then we had a fellowship meal and some entertainment or whatever afterwards. So we asked questions about the members and just a variety of things, questions about the pastors, important dates in the congregation, those kind of things. And we actually divided the group up between two or different teams. So there was a little opposition going on there and striving to get buzzed in first and things like that. And everyone enjoyed it very, very much. It was definitely a different vibe than the normal fellowship activities and, you know, quick potluck and everybody runs out the door. So I highly recommend that you get creative with your Jeopardy. I'll also tell you that as you create them, they work very well on tablet devices as well. So it's not flash technology, obviously, because it's still working on an iPad and the questions come up and can answer. So even just in a Sunday school setting, you don't necessarily have to have it projected. You can just tell them the categories and operate it all from right there on the tablet or whatever. The other plus is, and maybe you saw this when I was showing it, was the links available when you load the game also has a link for download. So you can actually download the games you create in an HTML format and play them offline. And so lots of possibilities with a simple little utility. It's called Jeopardy Labs. It's at jeopardylab.com. And I have a few examples for you on my ministry resource post, as well as a little video that demonstrates the things I just demonstrated on this podcast. So check it out.
Nicely done. So there's not, it's a single screen. You don't have multiple people come to the same URL. You just basically use this kind of an in-person kind of scenario, right?
Right. It would be really fun to do on a smart board where you could have like your Vanna White up there or your Alex Trebek turning over the questions or whatever. But yeah, single screen projection in a group setting would work really well.
Yeah. I can see Jason doing that. He looks a little bit like Alex Trebek.
You know what? Yeah. And hang on my Alex Trebek impression. So
you definitely have the brains. Have the brains to back it up.
Right.
I don't know. Fair I think enough. He probably there. Give me a few nice years. I have to get a little bit more distinguished.
All right. My ministry resource has actually been something that we've talked a lot about on the show. I thought I'd just kind of formalize it and make it a ministry resource, and that is our interactive faith series produced by the Synod. It's an interactive faith Bible study, a virtual Bible study. It's been going for, I want to say, about 5 years, 4 years now, maybe. There's a bunch of studies out there. The way it works is we use a technology, a live streaming technology from Livestream, which allows us to broadcast a webcam or video or desktop or both. People can log in from mobile devices or tablets or computers, whatever. The idea is that there is a presenter, so we try and pick the best people that we can find to do the presentation, to do the study. Usually the week, the presentations are 3 to 6 weeks, somewhere in there. And they're always on a Wednesday, 6 and 8 o'clock. But the best part about this, and the reason that it's a ministry resource, is that these are all recorded. So that you can take advantage of these in your own Bible study environments or personal growth, whatever. Bible study guides are available. You can, and there's a link in the blog post here that gets you to some of these pre-recorded or not pre-recorded, but recorded archives, so that you can kind of run through these series yourself. We've done this here in the Senate office for my technology team. Our department went through one of these a couple years back. They're kind of made to be just an hour where there's little breaks for discussion and sharing, those kinds of things. So they're kind of tailor-made to be used in Bible study settings. Even if you didn't take advantage of the series when it was live, you can take advantage still of the series in its recorded format. And these are really timeless topics. So these, all of these are just really kind of nice topics that would make a nice 3 to 6 week Bible study as well. So you could play the video, stop for the discussion time, use a study guide, make it your own in some way, however you want to do it. So there is one coming up if you want to join live on marriage. Mysterious Marriage by Pastor Rainey Hunter is starting tomorrow, at least as of our recording, so Wednesday, February 1st. These are at 6 and 8 o'clock Central Standard Time. He's calling it Mysterious Marriage, and I think it's a four-weeker. So you may want to tune in for that or watch for the archive videos if you want to see if this might be a marriage series that you'd want to share in your church or whatever organizational setting you have. So that is my ministry resource, our Interactive Faith Bible Study Series.
Always excellent and really neat to feel the community, especially if you get to tune into the live stream of the people studying with you at the same time and things. Yep. And so the really presenter, you know,
people. Yeah. And then you have the live chat going on. Very, very mm-hmm. cool technology.
Presenter takes a break and it just feels.
Yeah. All right. Sally, what's our featured video this week?
Well, we found a video about wearable technology, believe it or not. It's actually a TED Talk or one of those smaller TED Talk that they do from San Francisco, I think, maybe. But it's a year or so old, but it definitely will give you an idea of and the vision of wearable technology. And I think the emphasis is a lot on health, but I think education is presented as well. And so just a little more to extend that discussion of wearable technology from TED.
Very nice. That link will be in the show notes. And as usual, we would encourage you to go to the show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, to see the content there and to pick up all the links that we've talked about during the show. And also leave a comment. We would love to get your feedback, whether that's through voicemail, email. We are on all the social networks, so it's hard not to bump into us someplace. We'd love to hear your feedback, suggestions, commentary, whatever that may be. So that is at your disposal. Jason, thanks again. Really appreciate you coming on every other month for Educational Technology Focus and bringing your expertise and sunshine, and really appreciate you doing it again this week.
Yeah, my pleasure. I always enjoy coming on the show. So as long as you guys will put up with me, I'm happy to come back.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Invitations always.
Martin, we should mention we're going to do this again next week and
we are
hoping to have someone from Holy Hen House, a very impressive blog and group of bloggers, all women bloggers in this case, that are part of Wells and are sharing their faith online. And we want to hear about what they have going on over there at holyhenhouse.com and on other avenues as they branch out and go a lot of different directions from the original blog that they started with. So looking forward to having Amanda Rose on the show next week.
I am as well. So tune in next week for show 43. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Have a blessed week, and we'll see you next week.